Every Sunday we gather here at Staten Island Christian Church, and we call this worship service, don't we? A lot of people throughout this country and throughout the world, depending on the time, they all gather for worship services. A different time of the day, they gather. So we call this a worship service, but I'm thinking about, I read an article, somebody said, many attend church, but few worship. Because not because you go to church doesn't mean that you're worshiping God that day. You might attend church, but not necessarily worship the Lord. And so we have to understand, I mean, you know, we in our society, we grow up believing in something like, you worship God in church. That's why when you come to church, you're doing worship. But many people might go to church and not necessarily worship the Lord. Now the question would be, how do you know that you truly worshiped God? Have you ever thought about how do we even know how to worship God? How do you know that you are truly worshiping God this morning? You know, I just want to borrow the definition from the dictionary, because I think it's even biblical how Webster defines worship. And it will guide us, it will help us to understand what worship really is and what worship really isn't when we talk about this word that we throw a lot in churches, worship, worship services, worship meal, worship. It's like, what is that are we talking about? I mean, we hear worship a lot in the Bible, and we might not have a clear understanding of what worship is, maybe because we haven't spent time, and we just let the system think about worship. We let that dictate how our definition of worship is going to be. But worship, according to Webster, it's an act of showing respect. I like that. I mean, in a sense, like that's right on. It's in the Bible. An act of showing respect. A word for respect in the Bible will be fear. Remember the fear of the Lord? So an act of showing respect or love for a God. That's how Webster defines it. It's an excessive admiration for someone. I mean, when you think about, we worship sometimes movie stars. You know, when they see it, like, well, what are your autograph? That's, in a sense, according to Webster, I mean, you're here with me. According to Webster, that's, in a sense, it's an act of worship. You're worshiping them. You know, and then he says, it's reverence offered to divine being or supernatural power. That's the third definition that he has. I mean, kind of like when you go in the Bible, like, you have this reverence, which another word would be fear for a divine being, a deity, the supernatural. It's almost like you have this respect. So in a sense, you know, you're worshiping that thing or person. So really, that's what worship is. If we went to look up the definition in the Bible, literally, worship means to bow down. Bow down. Other definition would be you kiss the ground. Like you have so much respect and you're standing in awe of somebody or something and you just bow down. You realize this is greater than I am, so I better worship. But I love, like I said, Webster, like act of showing respect. I mean, think about how often do we respect God when we come to worship on Sunday? Is it respected by our attitude? Is it respected by what we do? Or are we showing him, you know, adoration? We love him. We do those things because we love you. We revere you, reverence for him. Remember, I was talking about how in our society we have lost that reverence for God. We have lost that fear of the Lord. And maybe we need to get that back, you know, in track again. Like I said, worship in the biblical sense is to bow down, to fall down. You see a lot of that in Revelation. The angels, the 24 elders, they're all falling down before the throne of God and saying, holy, salvation belongs to our God and to the Lamb who sits on the throne. That, man, that's worship. You see, in our society, we have gotten the idea that worship means singing. You can worship God without songs. You see, we have gotten that idea to the point that a lot of people think that all you're going to do in heaven is sing. Because, oh, when we go to heaven, we're going to worship the Lord. And apparently all we're doing is singing. And so we need to redefine better, biblically redefine the word worship. Because, yes, there might be singing, but there might be other things in heaven, too, that you will be doing. And still will be worship. Now, Jesus was asked this question one time. In regard to what is the right place to worship. This woman came talking to Jesus and said, you know, you Jews worship in Jerusalem, but we Samaritans, we worship on the mountains. So which one is right? Jesus finally laid out for her and says, woman, the time is coming that the place will not even matter. The time is coming. It doesn't matter you worship in Jerusalem or you worship in a mountain. Doesn't matter where you worship in a church building or you worship at a school. Whether you worship on the mountains, on the woods, or the train station, the place does not matter. What matters is, according to Jesus, is that you worship God in spirit and truth. Jesus said God is spirit, and he's seeking, he's after people who will worship him in spirit and truth. I mean, we hear that, it's almost like, you know, like the place does not really matter. Now, for some people, they can only worship in church, because apparently this is the sacred place. And Jesus already said, it doesn't matter where you work. You can worship anywhere, he says. But if you're going to worship, God seeks, he said, people that will worship him in spirit and truth. What does that actually mean? To worship in spirit and truth means to worship. It's a worship that takes place from within, from the inside out. Worship that takes place in the heart of worship. That's what God is concerned about. Where is our heart? You know, he doesn't look at the outside, but like someone was talking about, like people think they need to be prepared, you know, in order for them to worship. They had to wear this tie in order for me to preach or do worship. That does not really matter. What matters is the inside. Where is the heart? So David, King David understood that perfectly when he said, bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Man, that's worship, because worship really takes place on the inside. Worship pleasing to God must be transparent, offered with a humble and pure heart. That's what God requires. He said he was sick and tired of the burnt offering in the Old Testament, because people just bring in, you know, they did it as a ritual. Like sometimes Sunday might become a ritual for us. We just go because that's what we do on Sunday. But that's really the case. I mean, you think that God's going to be pleased with that worship? Did you just do it because that's what you always did it? I mean, think about that for a moment. He wants something that comes from your heart. So in Psalm 24, verse 3 and 4, he talks about those, that it's he's seeking people with a pure, contrite heart to worship him. He said, who may ascend to the mountain of the Lord? Who may stand in the holy place? The one who has a clean heart and pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god. Those are the ones that are going to be standing in the mountain of the Lord. Those who do not pledge their allegiance to idols, and those who have a pure heart. So he's really concerned about the heart of the worshiper. Not where the place, not where what the worship is bringing, but the heart of the worship. Because worship, really, authentic worship, takes place from the inside. In Isaiah 66, verse 2, he also talks about, they are the ones I look on with favor, those who are humble and contrite in spirit, and who tremble at my word. So this idea of worshiping God, I mean, we call this a worship service, but the question that I'm going to wrestle with, and I hope you wrestle with it as well, are you worshiping God today? I mean, you don't have to answer that, but just think about, did I come to worship, or I'm just like, maybe the song that they sing, I don't really like it, and now I guess you're not going to worship because the song wasn't your song? I mean, there are people like that sometimes, like, oh, they didn't sing the old songs that I love, and apparently you can only worship with those old songs. Then we have a little worshipful problem, because you can worship with songs without them. And please don't let that song, or maybe the mic just made a weird noise, just get you off worship. You know, because, you know, we got to battle with a lot of distractions. That's why sometimes somebody say many attend church but few worship, because maybe somebody just ringing you in your phone right now and the communication is gone. You know how hard it is in our society to be able to pay attention to God for just a few minutes when we're bombarded with so many things, so many distractions? I mean, it's like, it's hard, and I understand, but if he's our creator, if we want to give him respect, don't you think that he deserves more than an hour and a half? I mean, I'm just saying here, you know, thinking about it. It's like, I mean, if you're doing all those things for me, the least I can do is give you an hour and a half of my attention. I can go and watch the Transformers on the movie theater for 3 hours, and I can even hold my pee down. So if I can do that for them, I mean, think about that. I, don't want to get up because I don't want to miss. Like, but let me just, Lord, I mean, you're greater than them. Let me just, you know, sometimes I got to go and get me a, I mean, please, Lord. I mean, think about that. I mean, am I worshiping God? Am I really respecting him the way I respect celebrities sometimes? Or, you know, or going to the Yankees game or something. I mean, I love those things, but I got to put them in perspective. You know, who's greater? The great I am. So God is seeking worshiper. Jesus said that we'll worship him in spirit and truth. You realize your worship of God can be offensive to some people sometimes. You might worship God in a way that some people view you as like, and they'd be like, wow, why did she or he do that? That's offensive. There's an incident in the Bible, and Solomon read a little bit about today. Mark and Matthew, they tell us a story. Jesus is in Bethany. He's invited to eat at the house of somebody named Simon the leper. And Matthew 26, our text, and also in Mark, Mark tells the story. You can compare Matthew and Mark, and it's almost identical, the story and everything, what's going on there. So Jesus is invited to this, you know, he and his disciples, because that's what happened. You invited Jesus, the other 12 men coming with him, 12 disciples. So you got to make sure you're going to prepare food for Jesus. He ain't coming alone. He's coming with 12 other guys. So there's 13 people in your house that you open into. So he invited this Simon the leper. Apparently he was a leper. He had leprosy. And he invited Jesus, and he's there. And, you know, they're having a good time, predominantly men in the house. And all of a sudden, an uninvited guest appeared. This woman, out of nowhere, she came with an alabaster perfume, very expensive. And then she broke that thing, according to Matthew and Mark, and poured the perfume on Jesus' head. You know, she did that because she wanted to, but that wasn't well-liked by everybody else in the room. Let's just go to Matthew so that we can read the incident that happened. Because we can learn a lot about worship when we see that, when we analyze that, what's going on here. Matthew chapter 26, verses 6 through following. The NIV of 84 reads, while Jesus was in Bethany in the house of a man known as Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Very angry they were. Why this waste? They asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. I tell you the truth, whenever this gospel is preached throughout the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. So that's the story. I mean, Matthew and Mark does not tell us the name of that woman. John is the one that says it was Mary of Bethany, because apparently Jesus loved going to Bethany. You know, and he wasn't far away from Jerusalem, so he would go there. He got invited. Now, he's not, according to Matthew, he's not in the house of Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. He's in the house of Simon, perhaps a Pharisee. He's dining there, and an unexpected guest showed up, and you see what she did. She poured this perfume on Jesus' head. And what what she did, it wasn't well-liked. The disciples didn't like that a bit. And you saw they were indignant. Why this waste? According to the disciples, that perfume could have really been sold, and the money being used for missions, for something else. And that's true. I mean, the perfume was very expensive. You see the disciples already saying, this is how you should have done it. This is how, you see, why are you wasting that? I mean, that money with that perfume, you could have helped so many people, so many poor people you could have helped. They're already saying what she did was wrong. She did it the wrong way because they're already dictating, this is how you should have done it. Isn't that ironic or interesting? Sometimes, like, people want to dictate how you are to worship God, in a sense, like, whatever you're giving God, like, oh, why are you? It's like somebody saying, man, you got great talents. Why are you wasting your talent to sing in church? I mean, with a voice like yours, you should be over there, man, American Idol. Seriously. And it's like, and then it's like, again, you see, they're already like, you got so much talent, man. Why are you wasting that? Why are you wasting that talent, like singing for choirs in church? I sent the disciples, said, why this waste? I mean, you're wasting that on Jesus? Apparently, that's what, I mean, she poured that on Jesus. And what some people might see as waste, Jesus might see as beautiful. What some people might view as waste, no good, Jesus might view that as worship. You understand what I'm talking about? And here's the case. The disciples saw a waste. Jesus said, she did a beautiful thing to me. And why are you bothering her? He said. They had harassed this woman because of what she did. And they were angry at the action that she took, pouring this something that could have been, man, so many people could have been helped. But then Jesus explained to the disciples what's going on there. First, he defended the woman. Said, why are you harassing her? Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me, he said. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. Jesus said, you will always have time to help somebody, but you will not always have time to be with me like we are right now. Now, when Jesus said, but you will not always have me, people might say, well, hold on, but didn't he say that he will always be with me until the end of the age? But you see, in this case, he's talking about, he's about to leave the disciples. The disciples didn't realize that he's about to go to the cross and die. And he's going to be taken away from them. He even told them in John 14, I'm going to go and leave you, but I won't leave you orphaned. So you will not always have me in the face-to-face connection that we've been having. So Jesus said, you can always help. The poor people will always be around. He said, you can always help him, but you will not always have this opportunity to be with me on one-on-one like I am right now. You understand what he's saying? So Jesus said, leave her alone. She did a beautiful thing. And then this is the beautiful thing she did. Jesus said, she prepared my body for burial. Jesus, what she did is such a worshipful that she prepared my body so when I die, I've already been anointed. And she did it. And I love, Jesus goes to the extreme. In Jesus' book, she's a Hall of Famer. He said, as long as this gospel is preached in the whole world, what she did will always be remembered. Isn't that amazing? The gospel is supposed to be preached until Jesus comes back. And Jesus said, and she will always be remembered for that. She's a Hall of Famer in my worship book. I mean, can you worship God like that? He said, you know, the way how they worship me, man, I got him down here too. Because it's almost like it comes from their heart. It comes from their devotion or their, I mean, nobody dictating how they're doing. They just sold out to him. They just get lost in worshiping God. She did a beautiful thing. So, and Jesus told that to the disciples. But of course, the disciples did not quite get what he was talking about. Even when Jesus told them many times that he was about to die, they did not remember or they kind of like blew it. So they saw that as a waste and Jesus saw it as worship. Sometimes it happens to us too. Somebody's like, what? And Jesus said, Jesus is really pleased with how you're worshiping, but maybe somebody else is not. And then in that case, it doesn't matter what other people say as long as Jesus is pleased. Are you with me? I mean, transparent, authentic worship is not people pleasing. It's God pleasing. Sometimes whatever you do in worship to God might not be popular with the crowd, but as long as God is pleased, who cares about what the crowd thinks? Because authentic worship pleases God, and it might not please people, but you know, whether you came to please, I mean, sometimes whether you, I mean, worship leaders, they go through that a lot because sometimes even though they're on a stage, you know, it's like, look at me kind of thing, but it's like almost to the point that you have to realize, you know, yes, we're trying to get you in the atmosphere of worshiping God to really get into, motivate you to do that, but it's not about us. You know, I'm just a channel by which you can learn how to worship through songs and things, but, you know, I'm not the, don't look at me, kind of like, you know, and worship leader, like I said, sometimes you've seen some that it's almost like a concert, like it's all about them. I always say I love going to Chris Tomlin's concert because he get the whole crowd singing. You didn't come just to see somebody play and sing. Everybody else is singing. In fact, to the point that he shut up sometimes and start playing so that everybody else will sing. And through the songs, worshiping God through the music and the songs. She did a beautiful thing to me, Jesus said. Her worship was acceptable, beautiful to God, because it flowed from her heart. She offered Jesus her very best. I mean, to the point that even the disciples put a price on it. That could have been so far. One of the Gospels says that it was like a year's wage. That's a lot of money back in those days. And you just, and check this out. She did not just pour a little bit on Jesus. Like, you know, sometimes let's ratio that. Let's just like, I'm going to just worship you a little bit today. And then I come back tomorrow, next week. You know, it's like no, I'm going to just do it all today. Boom. She just, I mean, I think it's Mark said that she broke that jar. And just, in other words, I'm not holding back. I'm just going to pour all on Jesus because he deserves it. So it's amazing. I mean, she gave her very best. So that's why it was authentic. That's why Jesus saw it as a beautiful thing. Her worship, I mean, it came from the heart. She did not do that to please everybody else in the house. She came to that house with one purpose, and one purpose in mind was to go and anoint Jesus. I came here for Jesus. I didn't come for you. And so I just saw Jesus, and I do what I came to do, and I did it, and I can go home now. But I'm honoring Jesus, not honoring the crowd. She wasn't concerned how much that perfume really cost. She said, I'm giving it all to you. She was concerned about honoring Jesus with her gift. You see, when you worship God with authenticity, transparency, you're never concerned about what other people are going to look at you and say. When you worship God with authenticity, all that you're concerned about is God pleased with my worship. I know I had to learn that a lot because sometimes I like to raise my hands. But at one time I was like, maybe I don't want to raise it because people are going to look at me. Now I realize, who cares? I just want to get lost in my, if that's how I'm going to worship God, you know what I mean? I want to shake my head or whatever. I'm going to do it all for him. But you know, before it's almost like, maybe you're there. Like, I don't want to just get to, you know, the music is really, but you know, because people might think that I'm crazy or I'm Pentecostal or whatever. You know, if it's for the Lord, David understood that. David's bringing the Ark of the Covenant one time from the Philistines to Jerusalem and he got lost. I mean, you know the song, Want to Dance Like David Dance, which I would not recommend you to do that? Because his dance was, I mean, his wife is watching him. He's dancing with cheerleaders and everybody. I mean, they're celebrating because the Ark of the Covenant, God's presence is coming back to the city of the kings, to Jerusalem. And David, you know, they didn't have jeans in those days. It was just tunic. And he's dancing around with everybody else and exposing himself to the point. And his wife, I just picture Michael saying like, look at this fool. From the window. Then David gets home and then it's like, David like, then he had it because she just like, what are you doing there? You embarrass yourself in front of people. And you know what David said to her? I didn't dance for anybody else. I did it for the Lord. Michael, his wife saw that as a waste. Like, you're my husband. Like, humiliating yourself in front of everybody else. You're the king and that's how you act. And he says, I did it for the Lord. And it's like, he understood worship. You know, here, the disciples saw a waste. And Jesus saw something beautiful. David's wife saw like, out of disgrace. This is my husband. Look how silly he is over there in the street. And David said, I'm doing this for the Lord. I mean, we're bringing the Ark of the Covenant back to where it belongs. And I just go crazy for him. Man, that's authentic worship. It comes from the heart. And it might not please people at times. But as long as the Lord is pleased, you're good. You're worshiping him. So when I ask, how you know you worship him? When he's pleased with whatever you're offering him. Now be aware of empty worship or vain worship. Jesus called out those who worship in vain. In Matthew 15:9, this is what he says. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts is far from me. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrine the commandments of men. Jesus is quoting Isaiah 29:13, that Yahweh has said that about the people. They were offering sacrifices. They were doing things all because they learned how to do things and it became a ritual, but the heart was not even in the ritual. You know how it is sometimes? You might, because you learn how to worship God that way, like it becomes a ritual, but your heart's not even in it. I remember telling somebody one time, we had a praise team practice, And the piano player was a little like, well, he came like this. And, like, and I almost wanted to say, you know, don't play today. I mean, even if that's the attitude you're going to have, don't play. I mean, we can see from the outside, you don't want to be here. So God's not going to look to that worship with favor. It's not going to be a beautiful thing to the Lord, because you already kind of like, you know, I'm like that even when it comes to sports. I've been accused of being too competitive, because if you know me in some sports, if I'm going to join this team, I'm going to play ball. I'm not just going to join the team to sit on the bench and be like, yeah, I pass you the towel. That's not me. There are people, perhaps, they join churches just to sit on the benches. You understand what I'm saying? And it's almost like, are you joining because you want to get in the game, or just like you're content, just, you know? I used to coach baseball in 2003, and there was a kid for 2 years. I was observing him because the daddy came to me and called me and said, hey, you know, my son can throw, I don't know how many miles per hour. He's great. And I said, well, I got to see him. You know, I don't make my judgment call on that. So when I meet with him, so a year went by, I coached him, and okay, and then 2 years, and then I said, I got to talk to this guy. Because the father, I mean, he was the only son, and the father was in the minor league, got injured. And so now he's investing everything on this child, on this son. He got a personal trainer for him, the best equipment. In fact, it was Elgin Academy, and only rich kids go to the academy. And so I was coaching, and so the personal trainer would come and help me run the practices. But it's like 2 years go by, and it's like, I don't see that this kid really loved baseball. And finally, I had him to one-on-one and say, let me talk to you. We still worship, even though there's a noise right now. I said, let me talk to you. I will say his name just in case he listens one day. But I said, you know, your dad's investing. He's paying all that money for you to come to the academy. He's doing all that. But I just don't see that you love the game too much. And then he said to me, well, coach, it's my dad. You know, I'm not really. So, you see, I saw already, like, you're doing baseball just for your dad. Because your dad wanted it, but really not because you love the game. And I almost said, well, maybe choose another game, man. You don't want to play. Don't be here. You know, I want to coach people. I want to coach kids. I really want to play. I mean, you know, I'm not pushing a base. You're going to be like this. It's like, you don't even have the stand of a baseball player. Literally, second base, he would play like this. It's like, you got to be kidding me. Now, picture that. Sometimes when it comes to worshiping God, if you're going to be in it, be in it. Don't just like a little bit right now. I mean, just everything. Like sometimes you hear people say, you're going to be practicing that. You got to do 100%. I'm pretty sure Ryan tells that to the student. Don't just give me 50%. And you got to do your best if you want to learn that stuff. So think about, does God deserve our best when we worship? And this woman just gave her best. David gave it their best, his best to the Lord, because he is the Lord. And so when we come to worship, are we just going to give him a little bit of it? Or are we just going to just get lost and just give it all to him because he deserves it. He is worth it. So Jesus said, watch out for vain worship. He said, these people honor me. I mean, maybe they honor me with their songs. Your singing sounds good, but your heart is not even in it. You know how it is sometimes. You might just sing the songs because, oh, that's what the worship team want me to sing. So let me just sing, but I'm just thinking about what I'm going to do after church today. Let me tell you, you have not worshiped then. Because when you cannot focus into that moment, it's like something else distracts you. It's like it's gone. Whoop. And then there's your communion with God. So sing it because you feel it. Do it because you're doing it for the Lord and nobody else. So Jesus said, you know, from the Old Testament already, these people honor me with their lips, so their hearts are far from me. The fear of me, the Lord said, has become just something taught by men. They fear me because people tell them to, but they fear me because people tell them to fear me, not because they really feel that they should fear me. You understand what I'm talking about? It's like, they fear me not because it says in the church or the Bibles or somewhere, not because they realize, I gotta fear you because you are awesome. You deserve my adoration. You deserve my reverence, my respect, because you are great. Great is the Lord. So whatever you and I do for Jesus has to come from the heart. in order for him to view it as worship. Whatever you do can be an act of worship, by the way. Whatever you, this woman worshiped God just by pouring some ointment on Jesus. David worshiped God by going crazy, dancing, bringing the Ark of the Covenant. He's doing it for the Lord. You can worship God even when you're driving your car. Sometimes, being honest, I don't worship the Lord very much when I'm driving my car because somebody cut me off. And then, you know, at that moment, just like my communion with God is lost because I want to get even with, you know. But you can worship God. Anything you do can be an act of worship. Whatever we do, it has to come, it has to flow, spring from our hearts for God to be pleased with it. Otherwise, he won't be. Otherwise, it becomes a lip service, and he wants heartfelt adoration. He wants heart services and not necessarily lip services. You see, true worship or authentic worship is sacrificial. She gave to Jesus her treasure possession, valuable gift, to the point that the apostles put a price on it. It could have been sold, and man, so many people. She didn't care. She just gave Jesus her very best, so it's sacrificial, very costly. She didn't care how much it cost. She didn't ratio the perfume. She poured the whole thing on Jesus. Just like, I'm not going to just ratio my time for you, Lord, or the things you've given me. I'm just going to just give it all to you, because really, when it comes down to it, it all belongs to you anyways. But how many times we just, maybe a little bit for God today, and instead of like, Lord, it should all be yours, really. If I have a family, you gave it to me. What if you come and take it away? Because I never pay attention to the time that I have. I mean, all those things have been given to me. But like I said, she just poured everything. David also understood that. In 2 Samuel 24:24, he said, I will never offer sacrifice to God that cost me nothing. And the background there is that he wanted to offer God a sacrifice because there was a plague in Israel. And he understood, if I can offer a burnt offering or something to God, the plague will stop. So he goes to somebody's house and he says, hey, this is a perfect place for the sacrifice. I want to buy you this property and the wood and the oxen. And the guy said, no, you're the king. Just take it. Do whatever you... David said, no, you don't understand. I got to buy it for you. I want to buy that for a price. Tell me how much it costs and I pay it for you. And the guy says, no, but you're the king. And then David said, I will not give God anything that costs me nothing. I will not offer God anything that costs me nothing. He understood the whole idea of sacrificial. This is authentic worship because it costs me something. I'm going to just give it back to you, Lord. This woman didn't care about the cost. So authentic worship is sacrificial. It comes from the heart. You're sacrificing something to the Lord. Now the question that you and I had to go home and wrestle with, what are you offering God in worship? What are you giving to God sacrificially, whatever it is? Jesus felt honored by this woman because she just gave everything she had. Jesus tend to admire people. Remember the widow that only had one, but Jesus said she gave more than everybody else. Because, I mean, she gave sacrificially. Maybe it wasn't the right time for her to do it, but she didn't care. She just gave it all to God. And it was a beautiful thing. So when we gather here for church, when you do worship, even in your own family, wherever you go, you can worship. Is God honored? Is he revered, respected by how you worship him throughout the week? That's what you and I had to wrestle with. Because if we do all kinds of things just to please people, I mean, maybe God's not even pleased. Authentic worship is all about pleasing him, regardless of what people think about. Authentic worship is about giving to him sacrificially. Really something that, you know, it costs you something, but you give it to him, just like this woman did. If it comes from your heart, let me tell you, he is pleased. I love that song that Matt Raymond wrote, The Heart of Worship. See, I'm coming back to the heart of worship because really it's all about you. It's all about you, Jesus. And then he says, I bring you more than a song, for a song in itself is not what you require, because you're looking deep into my heart. because that's really where the worship is all about, in your heart. So David said, may the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, O God. Whatever I'm doing, Lord, make sure that my heart is in it too. I'm just not going to do it because, well, that's what church people do. Serving. But I'm going to do it because my heart is in it. And I'm dedicating this from my heart to you, Father. Then he'll be pleased. And then you're going to realize, I worship God because he knows the intention of my heart. He knows I did it all for him and dedicated it to him. So that's what authentic worship is all about. People that worship God in spirit and truth, spirit is from within. And whatever you give the Lord has to come from the heart for him to be pleased. If it's not from the heart, don't do it. You're going to sing a song that just like for people to sing. It's not for God. Yeah, you get the accolades of people, but the Lord probably wasn't pleased with it because all you were thinking about was like, look at me. If you're going to give offering to, don't do it just because of the church. Do it, Lord, I'm just putting it in your hands and you do whatever you want with it from the heart. Isn't that what even what Paul talks about? Like, for God loves a cheerful giver. Remember that? Now everything starts to make sense, like, because it comes from the heart. Not because somebody told you had to do it. God doesn't want you to serve him because some mama or daddy told you to do it. I even tell my kids, don't be a Christian because I want you to be a Christian. Eventually, you have to be a Christian because you want Jesus. You want him and you want to adore him. You want to celebrate him. That's what the heart of worship is all about. That's what authentic worship is, when we just pour everything on Jesus. Father, we give you glory and we give you praise.